Chapter 1, A Secret Origin Story. Eisman entered finance about the time I exited it. He'd grown up in New York City, gone to yeshiva schools, graduated from the University of Pennsylvania magna cum laude, and then with honors from Harvard Law School. In 1991, he was a 30-year-old corporate lawyer, wondering why he ever thought he'd enjoy being a lawyer. "I hated it," he says. "I hated being a lawyer. My parents worked as brokers at Oppenheimer Securities. They managed to finagle me a job. It's not pretty, but that's what happened." Oppenheimer was among the last of the old-fashioned Wall Street partnerships and survived on the scraps left behind by Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. It felt less like a corporation than a family business. Lillian and Elliot Eisman had been giving financial advice to individual investors on behalf of Oppenheimer since the early 1960s. Lillian had created their brokerage business inside of Oppenheimer, and Elliot, who had started out as a criminal attorney, had joined her after being spooked once too often by mid-level mafia clients. Beloved and respected by colleagues and clients alike, they could hire whomever they pleased. Before rescuing their son from his legal career, they'd installed his old nanny on the Oppenheimer trading floor. On his way to reporting to his mother and father, Eisman passed the woman who had once changed his diapers. Oppenheimer had a nepotism rule, however. If Lillian and Elliot wanted to hire their son, they had to pay his salary for the first year, while others determined if he was worth paying at all. Eisman's parents, old-fashioned value investors at heart, had always told him that the best way to learn about Wall Street was to work as an equity analyst. He started in equity analysis, working for the people who shaped public opinion about public companies. Oppenheimer employed 25 or so analysts, most of whose analysis went ignored by the rest of Wall Street. The only way to get paid as an analyst at Oppenheimer was being right and making enough noise about it that people noticed it, says Alice Schroeder, who covered insurance companies for Oppenheimer, moved to Morgan Stanley, and eventually wound up being Warren Buffett's official biographer. She added, there was a counterculture element to Oppenheimer. The people at the big firms were all being paid to be consensus. Eisman turned out to have a special talent for making noise and breaking with consensus opinion. He started as a junior equity analyst, a helpmate, not expected to offer his own opinions. That changed in December of 1991, less than a year into the new job. A subprime mortgage lender called Ames Financial went public, and no one at Oppenheimer particularly cared to express an opinion about it. One of Oppenheimer's bankers, who hoped to be hired by Ames, stomped around the research department looking for anyone who knew anything about the mortgage business. "I'm a junior analyst, and I'm just trying to figure out which end is up," says Eisman, "but I told him that as a lawyer, I'd worked on a deal for the money store." He was promptly appointed the lead analyst for Ames Financial. "What I didn't tell him," said Eisman, "was that my job had been to proofread the documents and that I hadn't understood a word of the fucking things." Ames Financial, like the money store, belonged to a new category of firms extending loans to cash-strapped Americans, known euphemistically as specialty finance. The category didn't include Goldman Sachs or J.P. Morgan, but did include many little-known companies involved one way or another in the early 1990s boom in subprime mortgage lending. Ames was the first subprime mortgage lender to go public. The second company for which Eisman was given sole responsibility was called Lomas Financial Corporation. Lomas had just emerged from bankruptcy. "I put a sell rating on the thing because it was a piece of shit. I didn't know that you weren't supposed to put sell ratings on companies. I thought there were three boxes, buy, hold, sell, and you could pick the one you thought you should." He was pressured to be a bit more upbeat, but upbeat did not come naturally to Steve Eisman. He could fake upbeat, and sometimes did, but he was happier not bothering. "I could hear him shouting into his phone from down the hall," says a former colleague, joyfully engaged in bashing the stocks of the companies he covered. "Whatever he's thinking, it comes out of his mouth." Eisman stuck to his sell rating on Lomas Financial, even after the Lomas Financial Corporation announced that investors needn't worry about its financial condition, as it had hedged its market risk. "The single greatest line I ever wrote as an..."